You're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anhola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden. And on today's show, we'll check in with a talented compost tea brewer here on the North Shore, making that product available to us for our gardens, as well as listen to words of wisdom on ecological restoration that has important implications to our agricultural and other land stewardship activities here in Hawaii. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700-square-foot warehouse at Pu'i Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
Yes, it's true. Thank you so much to our generosity, the generosity shown by our underwriters as well as our listeners keeping us on the air. And we're still fueled by the generous donations from our fall fund drive as well as donations made each and every day of the calendar year at kkcr.org. Please consider supporting us by dropping us a few dollars or more than a few dollars. Donation buttons are available on our website. Go check it out, kkcr.org. And if you're visiting the island, you can listen to KKCR not only by dialing us in on the airwaves here, but also by listening to the live stream at kkcr.org. So please take us home with you as well. And we want to thank as well David Kuhn, the beautiful sounds of Kauai's native forest birds. And more of his work can be heard at soundshawaiian.com. Check it out. And we have a nice show scheduled with you today. And I want to say we've got some great shows coming up as well in the coming weeks. And last night I had good fortune to spend a little bit of time with that amazing crew that's doing the Albizia tree trimming on the highway at Kalihiwai Bridge. Wailea Trees and Landscape Professionals are the stars of the show, and all the guys on the crew, but specifically Vili, Tyler, and Doug were the three men climbing high up into the trees and doing some pretty astounding tree trimming. And we're going to be lucky enough to have those three men in the studio next week to hear all about the art of the arborist and the challenges and opportunities there. So that'll be really fun next week. And then following, we're going to have Robin back in the studio preceding our seed and plant exchange coming up on March 13th, and more exciting guests on that show as well. So please stay tuned, and we've got a great guest in the studio right now. I want to welcome to the microphone back to KKCR former programmer here, Zoli Wall, who is here representing herself as well as Kwaisi Scapes Nursery. Hey, Zoli.
Hey, Paul.
How's it going?
Really good.
How's it to be back here at KKCR?
Oh, it's awesome. I love this radio station.
It's a super clubhouse in the Jungle Shack. And we love to be here, and we love to be talking about plants. And we're going to get around to talking about compost tea coming up real soon. But first, we're going to turn to our celestial session, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, our harvesting, and other gardening and farming activities. And today's Hawaiian moon, beautiful Mahealani, coming up tonight, rising over Kauai at 8:37 p.m., she'll reach her transit or highest point in the sky at 2:47 a.m. tomorrow morning, and she'll set at 8:53 a.m. Thursday. And if it's like a night like it was last night, cool, clear, beautiful night for enjoying that Hawaiian moon, 96% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated this evening. Full moon was this past Monday, just a couple days ago. Mahealani literally means heavenly haze, heavenly moonlight. So many blessings shining down upon us visually, but also the influence of this full moon makes it an excellent day for all work based on the deep knowledge received by countless generations of mahi'ai or farmers here in Hawaii. So good day for work of all kinds, and hopefully the ground is not so wet that we can't get our tools and equipment around where they need to be. Here on the North Shore, it's been quite wet, but we're looking forward to a little bit drier conditions for more good work. We also want to thank Heaven on Earth Starts and Robin for our biodynamic look at things today. We are in the descending moon, and today, Wednesday through Saturday, the moon is in the constellation of Virgo, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our rooting plants. Robin recommends onions, radish, beets, carrots, and sweet potato. And I was lucky enough to receive the fruits of the field from Ken Lindsay and his farm in Mauloa, and certainly contains some beautiful radishes and beets and carrots. So yeah, they're pumping right now. Sunday through Monday of next week, the moon enters the airy constellation of Libra, which is a good time to work with our flowery plants. Robin recommends planting marigolds, zinnia, for prize size summer plants. So these amongst the plants that really benefit from the long growing season and getting them in early will produce plants that will have a lot of vegetative growth in the first portion of their life cycle so that they can be producing copious blossoms throughout the year. And then on Tuesday of next week, the moon enters Scorpio, a water sign, a good time to work with our leafy plants and greens. Robin says plant your favorite greens, so it's a good time for all kind greens right now. And do we really have to have favorites? Can we just love them all? What do you think, Zoli?
Yeah, we can definitely love them all.
And I know at Kauai Seascapes Nursery is a location where you actually offer Heaven on Earth Starts.
Yes, we do. Robin brings us a really great selection of starts about every other week.
Fantastic. I've seen she and Baba have constructed another beautiful stand similar to the one that sits outside Hoku Whole Foods in Kapa'a. So it's a beautiful signature presentation, and those plants are just jumping off the, you know, really wanting to jump off the shelves into your arms. And we've been talking a lot about mycorrhizal, other kinds of fungi, and I think that that's a super boost for her plants. They're so well inoculated that not only do you get the food, but you're really doing a service to the microbiology of the soil by simply planting these plants in. because they come with so much feature-packed mycorrhizal fungi, which we talked about in detail on last week's show. But that is not the only way that we can improve the microbiology, and certainly should not be the only way that we strategize to do so. And Zoli, I know that you are bringing a very high-quality product to people here that can help with that.
Yeah, well, we've been brewing compost tea at Seascapes Nursery, and we brew it every Wednesday, so it's available for sale every Thursday. We don't continuously brew just because we want to have peak microbes in our brew, so we just offer it the one day a week.
Fantastic. Good. Well, I'm sure with demand, if people rise to the occasion and say, I need to have compost tea two times a week, and people turn out, that, you know, it could be made available, but let's start once a week, and certainly if we do it one time a week, that's a million times better than doing it no times a week.
Exactly, yeah.
So you have a great website. Kauai Seascapes Nursery has a super website, and you did a really nice web page all about the compost tea. But for listeners like myself who sometimes don't have the time to get to the website, I'd love to hear about some of the benefits that you can derive from applying compost tea to your garden.
Well, what compost tea really does is just boost the number and variety of microorganisms in your soil. We try to brew a balanced fungal bacterial compost tea, so it can really be used on any kind of plant in any setting. A lot of the benefits that come from it are from, you know, increasing the kind of microbes that are going to help fight pests and diseases, and also increasing the other kinds of microbes that help cycle nutrients in the soil. So it's kind of like fertilizer, but you're getting little tiny microbes to do the work for you.
Nice. We like all the work we can, all the help we can get with the work.
Yeah.
For certain. And bacteria, fungi, protozoa. The cool thing about compost or compost tea is we don't have to truly understand all the interrelationships or try to manage them, more importantly, that
right.
nature does the management. Nature seeks that balance, and we could dive endlessly into the details, and it certainly is interesting enough for that, but the cool thing is that we don't have to trouble ourselves with these details. Can you tell us about some of the ingredients that you're using for making your compost tea?
So we use organic, unsulfured blackstrap molasses is kind of the most important one, and then we're using really good quality compost. That's actually the most important one. We use worm castings. We use organic compost made here on Kauai. We also use some kind of forest soil, broken down wood chips that are really covered in mycelia, and just good garden soil as well. Then we also add in humic acids from Hendrickas, and we add fish emulsion and kelp concentrate and EM, which is effective microorganisms. Let me think if there's anything else we throw in there.
Water.
I think that's it. Yeah, and water, unchlorinated water. And then we let it bubble overnight and just grow and grow and work its magic, and then it's ready to be used.
Incredible. My mouth is watering. At any rate, it sounds delicious, and people can pick it up every Thursday at Kauai Seascapes. And tell us where that's located.
We're up Kalihiwai Ridge, or Kahiliholo Road, a little less than a mile up the ridge, and on the left-hand side, we've got a sign, and it's a really beautiful spot to come and just kind of walk around and see all the plants we have growing. It's lush, and we've got compost tea, so come on by.
It is. It's a hidden gem that escaped my attention, not because you don't have a beautiful sign out, but we get busy, and I've driven past the place literally hundreds of times. And oftentimes you'll see a sign for a little nursery, and, you know, it's somebody who has a table in their backyard kind of thing. And so I think I kind of cropped it up to that. And boy, was I surprised when I stepped behind your sturdy hedge, which sort of hides it from the road, and discovered this is a full-service, incredibly stocked, beautifully maintained nursery, the kind of nursery that just feels good. I mean, it almost feels like a planted garden. You can go there and you just feel your blood pressure reducing. It's just a beautiful place, inspiring place, of course, to see the diversity of plants and imagine them planted in your own landscape. So I do want to let people know that it is a beautiful place, and we're very excited that you guys are going to be supporting us as sponsors of the 16th Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange by bringing your compost tea as well as some of your plant stock to provide for the exchange.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have compost tea available for sale, and we'll be donating the proceeds to Regenerations. We'll also have a good variety of perennial edible veggies for giveaway, as well as some flowers that are really great for attracting bees. And what else are we going to have?
Surprises.
Surprises, yeah. A lot of good stuff.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to that.
Oh, native plants. We're going to have a couple native ferns to give away as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. And we just got word that Kauai Native Plant Society will be with us as well.
Oh, awesome.
And a lot of really great groups are coming together to share their piece of what becomes a true festival event with the Seed and Plant Exchange. So we're really proud that you guys are joining us at Kauai Seascapes Nursery. Thank you so much. Thanks to Serena for stepping boldly forward to share the gifts that you guys propagate and perpetuate at your nursery.
Oh,
and
you.
Can I ask you just in closing that you share your business hours so people know when they could come to visit you?
We're open Monday through Friday from 8 to 4 and Saturdays from 9 to 2.
Great. And you have a beautiful website and the address?
KauaiSeascapesNursery.com.
And a telephone number?
828-0444.
Great. And I get a number of requests. It seems every couple of weeks somebody asks me, where do I get fruit trees on Kauai? And they're looking for something specific, or they're looking for a general general selection. So does Kauai Seascapes Nursery have fruit trees?
We do. We have a great selection of fruit trees. We have grafted fruit trees, tropical exotics. We try to bring in a good variety of just about everything.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and we'll see you at the exchange.
All right. See you then.
Thank you.
Aloha.
That's Soli Wall of Kauai Seascapes Nursery, and this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we're going to turn right now to excerpts from an excellent film on ecological restoration, and this is a film called Green Gold, and the stars of the show, John D. Liu, a former producer and cameraman for CBS News. He became director of the Environmental Education Media Project in 1997. He still serves in that capacity now. And he's collaborating with Jeff Lawton, who's familiar to many of us in the permaculture world from Australia, one of the chief proponents of permaculture to restore large-scale ecosystems. And so this is a condensed version of some of the lessons learned. And this is from a YouTube video called Green Gold, which can be viewed on YouTube. Checked it out. We're going to visit China, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Jordan on our journey. And so I hope you enjoy this excerpt from Green Gold on In the Garden on the Farm. Aloha.
In 1995, when John D. Liu, as an ordinary cameraman, got an assignment to film the lush plateau in China, he saw how the local people transformed an area almost the size of the Netherlands from a barren, exhausted desert into a large green oasis. He was baffled. From that moment on, greening deserts became his goal in life.
Learn about it, the more I become interested in how this might relate to other parts of the world. And it looks like the history of the Chinese in the Lus Plateau is not simply about the Chinese. It's about what happens when human beings don't understand how ecosystems function.
Liu used his camera to record the virtually superhuman efforts of the Chinese. He made a film about it, Hope in a Changing Climate, that he posted on the internet to distribute it worldwide.
China's Liu Plateau is a region that stretches for 640,000 square kilometers across north-central China. Unspoilt valleys in neighboring Sichuan show us how it might once have looked. It's the sort of natural abundance that is necessary to support an emerging civilization. How could a landscape with such potential have been reduced to this? When Chinese scientists and civil engineers began to survey the area, they realized that several thousand years of agricultural exploitation had denuded the hills and valleys of vegetation. The relentless grazing of domestic animals on the slopes meant that there was no chance for young trees and shrubs to grow. Rainfall no longer seeped into the earth, but simply washed down the hillsides, taking the soil with it. Over millennia, this progressively destroyed the region's fertility. Over an area as extensive as the plateau, millions of tons of silt are swept down into the Yellow River, which gets its name from the color of the fine loess soil. The mounting quantities of silt clog up the river, impeding its flow, contributing to the floods that give the river another name, China's Sorrow. In some areas, creating floating mud mattresses that attract passing tourists. A local problem becomes a national problem. In the dry season, the light, unprotected soil is swept up in the winds, causing the dust storms that are blown over China's cities and beyond its borders.
The Chinese have meanwhile solved the problem. The way they have has become John D. Liu's mission.
The first and probably one of the most impressive of those findings from the Liu Plateau is it's possible to rehabilitate large-scale damaged ecosystems. So if we can rehabilitate large-scale damaged ecosystems, why don't we do that?
Ever since, Liu has been invited all over the world to assist government leaders, policymakers, and villagers with his knowledge and experience. We follow him in Jordan, where the desert is advancing and water is becoming increasingly scarce. He is here at the invitation of the Jordanian royal family. Princess Basma bint Ali wants to stop the desertification of Jordan and has found an ally in Liu.
Welcome to the Botanic Garden.
Thanks very much.
I'm glad you were able to make it today.
We'd like to look around and learn as much as we can about the Botanic Garden and also to learn how the concept of this fits into a larger thought about restoration for the whole country.
I mean, he is someone that is well known. I'm very impressed by the work that he's done and the amount of influence he's been able to have on governments, for example, Rwanda. And that's something we can learn from and benefit from. And if we can do just 1% of what he's done there here, that would be amazing. And I keep on saying natives, 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 because they're the ones who are well adapted to our area with the encroaching climate change and desertification. We really need to rely on our native plants. As you can see now, we're not a classical botanic garden of the colonial era or relics of the colonial era, but we're trying to teach everyone, regardless if they're in Jordan or otherwise, that you can very easily restore an area which was degraded.
Well, this was the land of milk and honey. This was the promised land. These are the places where historically people have done agriculture and done animal husbandry for thousands of years. But the lands are exhausted. They allow hundreds and thousands of sheep and goats to walk across here, and any green thing that sticks up its head is food. And they're just walking around here getting everything. Well, you can't let them do that anymore. They'll have to stop. They've been doing that since thousands of years, and that's what's destroyed this area. So if that doesn't stop, you won't be able to fix this.
The way we've done it is we excluded grazing for the first 3 years, and that worked out very well. And in that 3 years, this is when we discovered the species that came up on its own, which were thought to be extinct and was last recorded in the 1800s. It just came up on its own. So we allowed the land to breathe, to take a breath, and to see what's going on. We didn't interfere. We didn't do any planting at the time, just to see how it reacts. And that gave us a lot of feedback of how we can deal with or how to rehabilitate areas. So it was very efficient for us. And as you can see here, it's very overgrazed. It's very barren. This is outside our borders. And then within here, you can see the difference.
Just by making a fence around this place, you'll get back grasses. That's what's so extraordinary. Now, when you get back grasses, that means each year, first of all, you have perennial root systems, and they'll spread out. And you'll have microbial communities living and growing in this microclimate that's created. So then you won't have direct sunlight hitting. You won't have UV radiation irradiating and sterilizing this microbiologic habitat. So everything will change. Then you're in an accumulative situation. Now you're in a disaccumulative situation, where there's always less vegetation, always less organic matter, always less biodiversity. That's exactly wrong. We need to shift that to always more organic matter, always more biomass, always more biodiversity.
We're listening to Green Gold with John D. Leo here on In the Garden on the Farm on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea.
I cannot stand and watch our land be degraded and ignorant people abusing it. It's my duty to take a stand to make things better. And I've carved out my world in the environment. Other members of the families have taken on various different topics, but this is my little niche.
So now it's been really a long time since I began, and so I'm far down the path. And I think if you go down this path and you start to look and you say, well, that's an interesting phenomenon, you can see the relationship between hydrology and vegetation and biological life. And you realize that, well, actually that's the basis of the air. And the natural water system. And it's how the atmosphere and the hydrological cycle were created. And how they were constantly renewed. And then you come to places like this, which are massively degraded, and you realize that people aren't thinking about this ecological function. They're ignoring the science that we know about this. And they're believing that what's important is to produce something. But actually, that's not what's the most important thing right now. The most important thing for survival and sustainability for humanity is that places, not just individual places, but the entire planet is functional. If we understand how the natural evolutionary processes work and we emulate those and we don't disturb those by our behaviors, We can live in the Garden of Eden.
Another example from Liu's film, Hope in a Changing Climate, is Ethiopia, where he also took his camera to investigate. Ethiopia is the perfect example of how vulnerable man is to environmental catastrophe. The problems in this country are only intensified by wars and civil conflict. And now the man-induced climate change seems to increase the misery even further. As on the lush plateau, centuries of agriculture have destroyed nearly all natural vegetation. The dry gullies are marked by heavy floods.
These gullies are evidence of the enormous power of runoff during the rainy season. Without vegetation cover on the hillsides, when the rains come, the water doesn't soak into the ground but flows away in a flood. Then it's not available for agriculture during the rest of the year. This leads to drought, and famously for Ethiopia, famine.
But just as I've witnessed in China, there is hope that the situation here can be reversed.
Yeah, that root could survive.
In just 6 years, Professor Lagesa Nagash and local villagers have transformed a severely eroded terrain by planting indigenous trees and plants. Almost miraculously, a clear flowing stream has emerged where once there was a muddy trickle.
How is it that it's possible for you to get the stream to flow throughout the year?
It is because of the vegetation cover, which has been regenerating on this mountain. This water is maintained in the landscape because as soon as rain falls on the canopy, on this vegetation, that rain then infiltrated gradually into the ground, ending up with this steady flow of this river. Water is life. Without water, nobody can do anything. I'm amazed, as short as 5 years, 6 years, you get clean water like this, provided you work hard for restoring this degraded landscape.
About 1,000 kilometers further north, in the village of Abraha Asbaha, another near miraculous phenomenon is occurring. Farmers are finding water at the bottom of their wells, despite the poor rains this year. The famine of 1984 struck the people of this valley very hard. Many migrated, many died. Now the people are returning. The village chairman, Gabor Gede, remembers well how life used to be.
I'm not even talking about 10 years ago, but about how things were 5 years ago. Things were really horrible here 5 years ago. The drought, the heat, the wind, the withered soil was simply blown away. They set up a program so that we could move to a different area.
With government support, they applied the same principles as the Chinese, setting land aside for natural vegetation to return. In the ravines, they built small dams, which are now fed by underground springs. And like Professor Lagesa's stream, rain that fell weeks ago now slowly seeps through the subsoil, replenishing the supply of water.
The land has become fertile again. There have been enormous improvements. Our fruit trees were shriveled up, but now they're growing again. There's even a large number of species. Those are really positive results. Now we have food security. Our children can go to school. We have a better life. We no longer have to ask the government for support, thanks to the changes that were implemented. Wild animals that have disappeared have returned, even the leopard.
The most important issue for Africa, and I consider this
Africa's 21st burning issue is restoration. No matter what we do, we might be good at rocket science, I mean, if we are nuclear science, but the environment, restoring this huge, vast landscape, you know, degraded landscape, is critical for Africa, but also for the entire region. Consider Egypt. Look at the Sudan, where 86% of the Nile flows to these countries. How can we support life in Egypt without restoring Ethiopia's mountains? So this is regional, national, and international.
Liu's typical working method is to share all his footage and documents with those asking for his advice. In this case, the staff of the Jordanian princess.
Well, it's videos, but it's also a lot of documents. There's studies on hydrology and studies on the relationship between soil organic matter and moisture. And, you know, the type of strategy documents that governments need to see what they're going to do. So they have to have a strategy that everyone can see.
With the Jordanians, he shares the documents on Rwanda, one of Liu's success stories. His proposals there were welcomed by the Paul Kagame administration and yielded stunning results, as we can also see in Liu's film.
We had to take a careful look at what had actually been happening that damaged this system, and therefore had to reverse that again with the human action. And this is why it is important to look at how human actions can destroy or can reverse what has been destroyed or even protect our environment.
This tiny country is grappling with the problem of a growing population trying to eke out a living on a finite amount of land. As in China and Ethiopia, overfarming on the hillsides caused serious erosion and a decline in fertility, forcing poor farmers to move into protected areas, such as the Rugazi wetlands, a wildlife site of international importance. When farmers drained this marsh to try to grow more food, they not only damaged an important wetland ecosystem, they also had a significant impact 3 hours' drive away in Kigali, the capital city. The water that pours from the marshlands is a vital source of hydropower for Rwanda's capital. As the wetlands began to dry out, power stations below couldn't generate enough electricity. The Rwandan government rented diesel power generators to make up the shortfall. So government policymakers focused on how to restore the Rugazi wetlands. If people were the problem, they could also be the solution. The government decided to help the farmers leave the wetlands and to restore the degraded slopes above them, improving their croplands and encouraging trees and shrubs to grow back, capturing the rain. The wetlands are now recovering. Great volumes of water once again cascade down to power the hydro stations. Carbon-free electricity is replacing the diesel generators. Electricity prices have stabilized. Restoring and preserving natural ecosystems like the Rugazi wetlands benefits everyone.
So we think we want a lot of manufactured goods and more and more and more. And this is a wasteful and not a very effective and certainly not a sustainable way of life. And especially with 7 billion people and adding a billion people every 12 years, it's not possible to do that. So we need another model. And here's a model which can restore the function. It's been proven to be able to restore hydrological function, to restore fertility. So we have vast areas of degraded lands. there's plenty of room for opportunity. And this could employ millions and millions of people. And their work wouldn't be, just be about themselves. Their work would be about ensuring that future generations can survive.
What the Rwandans recognized is that the marshlands are far more valuable as a natural system providing water for energy than as farmland. This principle is the same for the remaining hillsides and ravines.
What we're seeing here is very interesting because it's a line between human activity and natural systems. And in the human activity, we've been able to value the productivity from agriculture and give it a monetary value. But in the natural systems, we haven't been able to value the trees, the biodiversity, the water that's absorbed into the biomass and into the soils.
And there's another vital service that trees and plants provide, photosynthesis. Vegetation reduces the greenhouse effect by taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Climate change is better withstood with trees. You know, humans, no matter how intelligent we are, no matter how capable we are with all our technologies, we are helpless in the face of climate change. We have not yet properly understood the miracles performed by trees.
Based on what I've seen in different parts of the world, it seems to me that whatever rainfall comes down needs to be infiltrated and retained into the system. If it's lost through runoff or through excessive evaporation rates, then it's going to gradually degrade the system. And if this goes on for hundreds and thousands of years, the ultimate outcome is collapse.
Petra in Jordan is one of the seven wonders of the world. Almost all of the buildings that were once there are now ruins, and the landscape has turned into a desert. Millenniums ago, the builders of Petra used their knowledge of water management to create an oasis, and hence the conditions for Petra's prosperity and growth in those days.
This would have been a busy street once.
Yeah.
Actually, full of commerce. Here we are in a situation where the heritage of all that is an attraction and curiosity for people to come and visit.
This is where Liu first met the Australian Jeff Lawton. Lawton specializes in rebuilding functional ecosystems from the ground up. Liu immediately recognized his soulmate in him.
We're in a quite severely degraded landscape.
Do you think that over historical time or somewhere back in the past, this had a different look?
Oh, most definitely. I think you're looking at a landscape that's more or less bald. It's eroded down almost to the bones of the geology. And this was a landscape full of life, and even top predators. There are still leopards here now in some of these valleys, remnants of top predator habitat that had a whole ecological range of diversity and abundance.
So in fact, we're in the land of milk and honey.
Potentially we are. That's right, but it doesn't look like it.
So what do you think is the potential for areas like this?
Oh, there's absolute potential for an abundance, an absolute abundance of life, of water flow, of climate moderation. So you'll get microclimate and regional climate moderation, completely different hydrology. And the interesting thing there is that then you get the potential for well-designed productivity, leading to permanence in human culture.
When you have these types of degraded states, people are in a cycle of poverty and ecologic destruction. And they just continue to be poor, and they pass this poverty from one generation to the next generation. Now, when you get on a process of restoration, you can see that the next generations will have much better lives. So they'll be able to participate in a much richer social life. They'll have different cultural changes. They'll have increased wealth. They'll have better diet and health care and educational opportunities. Everything will be different.
In the vast, lush plateau, Liu had already seen how much persuasion it took. There, they had to make 2.5 million people understand that it would be best for now to keep their cattle indoors and not to make optimum use of their land, to give nature some space. But how do you tell that to the locals who depend on the cattle and the produce of the land?
The people didn't understand the project. They didn't see why it was needed. They want us to plant trees everywhere, even on the good land, even there. Well, how about the next generation? You can't eat trees.
What eventually convinced the local people was the assurance that they would have tenure of their land, that they would directly benefit from the effort they invested in the new project.
The objective was to give the hills a hat on top, a belt in the middle, and shoes at the bottom. The trees on the hilltop formed the hat. The terraces formed the belt. And a constructed dam forms the shoes. That way everything can grow again, and the economy and our lives will improve.
Hills and gullies were designated as ecological zones to be protected. Farmers were given financial compensation for not farming on them and keeping their livestock penned up. When I first filmed Mr. Ta Fu Yuen and his colleagues back in 1995, I had no idea this initiative could achieve such dramatic results.
In the middle of the Jordanian desert, Jeff Lawton has created an educational vegetable garden to show the local people how to grow vegetables in the desert.
The food here is very expensive, and they can't grow much in their home garden, and the kids go back to their parents, and we have a ton of food. Like, how you do that? Like, what's the secret of this?
How long does it take to bring back a system to some sort of functionality?
I think we're finding it surprisingly quick. If we apply the best design we can and go straight into earthworks and water harvesting and mass species plan out, within 3 years, you're starting to see dramatic effects. Recharging of the water cycles, rehydration, diversity starts to increase on its. When we're talking Jordan, this is the Middle East. Jericho's just here, 10,000 years of permanent occupation. You can't really have a test case anywhere with a longer human effect on the landscape, let's say.
Lawton operates demonstration projects all over the world to show his students how to build up an ecosystem step by step into a self-sufficient system. Here in Jordan, he has also set up a demonstration project. Within 3 years, the garden will work as a fully self-sufficient ecosystem. Irrigation will no longer be needed. The land even supplies water, and the people can eat from the land all year round.
But lots and lots of different herbs in the understory.
And here's a carob, which is a chocolate-type substitute. So there's this mass of diversity all interacting together so that we end up with a productive ecosystem assembly.
The system used by Lawton, which was conceived in Australia, is called permaculture. The goal is to design a working and fully self-sufficient ecosystem where man and nature share the center stage. The low-maintenance system produces fruit and vegetables without any use of artificial fertilizer. This technology is now used by millions of people worldwide.
So in 2.5 years, you've gotten this kind of vegetative cover now. What kind of thing are you imagining for 5 years and 10 years? What's
within 5 years, we'll be starting a closed canopy. So a lot of trees will be touching each other. We'll be producing all our own mulch. We won't have to bring any organic matter in from outside. Everything will be produced here. So it'll start to close as a system. It'll cycle its own nutrients within the five-year cycle there, and then it'll just go on from there with more and more organic matter, more and more biomass, and more and more diversity as it goes.
So in 3 years, you can get something which would feed a family and begin to move toward a functional system.
Definitely. We've already had a date harvest. Our olives are flowering very well now, and the vegetable garden's producing quite well already.
And the compost doesn't actually feed the plants. It feeds the soils.
It feeds the soil organisms. So the largest diversity of organisms in the known universe, the soil organisms. There's 50 million genus of bacteria and 50 million genus of fungi. And you're feeding the organisms, and their exudates and their interactions are feeding the plants. That's how it works with natural systems, and that's how it works with organics.
Well, that has been Green Gold from John D. Liu and Jeff Lawton as well, our permaculture mentor. If you want to find out more information about John D. Liu's work, you can visit the Environmental Education Media Project website. And that's located at eempc.org. If you visit that, you can explore different restoration projects around the world, learn about partner organizations conducting the work, and read in greater depth about Liu's academic research. And you can also watch the film Green Gold on YouTube. Time now just for a few announcements. We want to let you know that the AVA workshop that we talked about last week, we postponed. Please stay tuned, and we'll keep you up to date. We hear that Uncle Jerry Konanui is coming back to Kauai and perhaps offering a workshop on this topic. So looking forward to that possibility. We do have the 16th Kauai Community Seed and Plant Exchange coming up Sunday, March 13th from noon to 5 p.m. at Ainoho Community Park, home of Kauai Mini Golf. A great lineup of entertainers, including Kaimi Andel of Ku Halelea, the Sacred Earth Choir, Tangled Roots, and many more. Lots of vendors, educational booths, and of course the seeds, plants, and cuttings forming the stars of the show. If you haven't been to a seed and plant exchange, you will be pleasantly surprised. Sunday, March 13th. We want to let you know as well, a free movie night at Ainoho is happening this Friday, featuring the film Fern Gully. It's the showing is 6:30 p.m., and if you want to come, you're encouraged to bring blankets and chairs. You'll be lounging on the lawn, so we'll hope for clear weather. The Namahana Cafe there will have dinner and refreshments for purchase as well. And we also want to let you know that there's a free workshop coming up February 27th. I believe that's Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. at Kauai Nursery and Landscaping, hosted by the Kauai Invasive Species Committee, talking about their new Plant Pono program, and we'll hear more about that as well at the Seed Exchange. We also have an Introduction to Aquaponic Systems workshop coming up at KCC beginning on March the 2nd, and I just spoke with Ueli, and he informs me that there are still some scholarship opportunities available there. So for more information, you can go to, if you do an internet search for Kauai OCET, O-C-E-T, you'll get information. As well, Jimmy Trujillo is offering his box building, his honey, or rather to say bee box building workshop for producing honey. It's a two-session class beginning on March 11th, and again on March 18th is the second part of that session. And for more information, do an internet search for Kauai OCET for more information on that. And we want to encourage you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations and the Pupule Show later on. It's a great Wednesday, as always, so please stay tuned to KKCR. We want to thank our in-studio guest this week, Zoli Wall of Kauai Seascapes Nursery. And you can visit their nursery in the virtual sense by visiting kauaiseascapesnursery.com. You can reach them at 828-0444, and they're located up there on Kahilihola Road in Kalihiwai. And they will also be joining us at the Seed and Plant Exchange, along with many others. And one person who's coming back again to the Seed and Plant Exchange is Gray Hayton of Po'oku Community Garden. He's encouraging people to bring their gardening tools to get sharpened. So thanks, Gray, for that and for all the organizations contributing to a great event coming up soon. So thanks for tuning in. If you want to hear archives of the show, you can go to kkcr.org, click the Audio Archive tab at the top of the page. And if you want to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it to me a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again to In the Garden on the Farm. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Hale'iwa.